This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
Oh, man, it's Brock and Salk here, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. This hour is brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. I'm in a good mood and I'm encouraged, man. It's as good of a loss as I think this Seahawks team could have right now, going up against what seems to be the best this league has to offer and showing that you can stay right there with them. I would hope that they come away encouraged. And I've seen games like that for teams that are on the come, and I think the Seahawks are. It's weird because for years they've been a team trying to hang on to previous glory, and this year's team doesn't feel like that. If this year's team was, if this was last year's team, I'd be furious today. If this was the last couple of years, I'd be mad. Like, what do you mean you did this, that, and the other, and you couldn't come up with a stop when you had to? What's the matter with these guys?
Yeah, it's Bennett and Averill and Cam and Earl and those guys on the field, sure.
I'd be so much more upset. But it's not. This is a team that is that is rebuilding, reloading, whatever phrase you want to use.
It's turning.
This is a team that went out in the offseason and declared that it wanted to be able to run the ball and be physical again. And through the first four games of the season, that hadn't really been true. And yesterday it was. I know they didn't win the game, and I know that they let it slip through their fingers. And the problem with being a physical team offensively is that it doesn't work unless your defense is able to also kind of live up to that billing. And maybe they will when they get KJ right back or whatever. I don't know. But at the end of the day, I came away thinking this team is moving in the right direction now instead of the wrong one.
Yeah, my pendulum was swinging wildly yesterday between absolute loving what they're doing. Man, this trap. Man, this ISO. Man, this zone read. Man, this run game. Man, Fluker. Like you, I rewound that play four times to watch him pancake Ndamukong Suh. Hey, Ndamukong, go punch that little dummy all week in L.A. Let that go viral. But when it's game time, who's going to punch you right in the mouth and then pancake you? And, you know, well, I'll get to this in one of my takeaways of whether that was a call or not, but I love that. I sure hated the defense. I sure hated the plan. I sure hated that you allowed Boy Wonder and Genius there to have 306 yards on first down because you were so vanilla. You were so vanilla. You didn't dictate at all. What?
Is there a reason that you only text the negative thoughts to us during the game?
What?
Like, why is your text thing like a steady stream of negativity, negative Nelly?
I only texted you twice. That's not true.
If you were truly torn between the good and the bad during the game, why do you only text the bad? It's time for takeaways.
Got like a deep touchdown, Seahawks!
It's Brock and Salk's takeaways.
Got him in there. It is intercepted. Shaq Griffin picks it off.
And it starts
now. That will never happen again. From this day forward, I'm going to not text you anything but love and flowers.
You're such a liar.
You watch. You watch.
Because you're not allowed to put it anywhere else in the world.
Maybe.
Like, you're perfect, Brock Hewitt, and everybody loves you, and everything's wonderful. Oh, I love Brock. Sure. I agree with him. I agree with everything he says. He's such a pillar in our community, and I just think he's a gent.
Yes.
But our text chain is the one safe place you have to be a real person.
No, you can read them. It's absolutely still real. It just happens to be a little bit more negatively, frustratingly bent.
Do you want me to read these ones about Molly?
Yeah, go ahead. Whatever you got.
I'm just kidding.
Do you have anything?
I'm just
on
kidding.
There?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
Thankfully.
I'll tell you this. Russ's game is exactly, I'm going to start there as you find those texts. Russ's game today is exactly the Russell that this team needs. In this reset, in this turn, with their style, this is the Russell that they need. Do not put the ball in harm's way. Do not create a lot of negative plays. Do not take a lot of risk. And then when the play is there to be had, you got to hit it.
Ninth play of the drive on second down and goal. Russell play fake, looks, stops, looks again. Now he starts again. Now he rolls right. Still looking to the end zone. Now he goes, touchdown, Seahawks, David Moore. But did he get knocked out of the back of the end zone?
No, he did not. I think his buddy Nick Vinette did, but he did not. He stayed in bounds. That was some vintage Russell, as was a little flip to Vinette earlier that Ndamukong Suh tried to chase down. That was a phenomenal play. As were the slant and go that you just don't overthrow, or the shot to Tyler Lockett that puts you at the 32-yard line in the fourth quarter. You don't overthrow that, or the touchdown to Lockett that you just don't miss those. Man, if you're going to play this style of game, and it's going to be run and play action, and when you get your shots, you got to hit them. And he hit nearly all of them yesterday. Not really a misfire, not a misthrow. There were a couple throwaways, and what was he, 13 completions? That was it, 20 some attempts. You know, as a QB rating, again, way north of 125. That's winning football. That usually wins for you. That's the kind of vintage rest this team is going to need.
Yeah, it's funny. You and I saw this similarly with Russell. This is one of my takeaways as well, because I thought I loved his game. I got a text from somebody or a tweet from somebody after saying, oh, Russell blew it in the fourth quarter, this, that, and the other. I'm sorry. I just didn't see it that way. I thought that was a really good Russell Wilson game. He was accurate. He made great decisions with the football throughout the game. He got out in front, tried to throw a few blocks once again, showing what he, you know, his desire to give of himself and sacrifice for this team. But more than anything, it was his creativity. Look, when Russell Wilson is Russell Wilson, his creativity is what sets him apart and what makes him so much fun to watch. And while you pointed to that touchdown, the play that I thought may kind of set the tone was much earlier in the game.
Play fake by Russell. Stops, looks, plants his feet. Nobody open downfield. Now he looks, pump fake. Shovel pass, Van Ness. 35-30, 25-20, down to the 15-yard line. Nick Van Ness on a dead sprint for the goal line on a shovel pass from Russell. You can't rush and cover everybody. Somebody's going to come open. And Van Ness did right down the gut for 32 yards and a first down.
Poor Nick. He's just trying not to fumble. He's running down the field, looking just behind him.
Down, like he was trying to get that first down.
Oh, gosh.
Stumbling to the sticks.
The John Ryan call is exactly right. Luke Wilson, John Ryan, and Bennett, that trio, the three stooges right there that you just feel like at any moment a helmet could pop off. He's going to get harder than anyone you've ever seen.
What are you doing? Just run down the field. Like, contrast that with Nuke Hopkins last night running to ice the game for Houston.
Spin cycle, spin cycle, spin
He's
cycle.
Running around, the ball's flying everywhere. He's holding it like Deion Sanders. No problem. He manages to take it down to the 15 or whatever, but Vanette is like, oh, I'm going to fumble. I'm going to fall. Oh, my God. But whatever. That was a great play from Russell Wilson. And it's vintage Russ, man. Make a couple guys miss, and then that creativity to slide a pass a defender. I thought he played a really
good
game.
I'll just say this, though, and I got some of those similar texts that you got, and it's just where the bar is for Russell. 4, 6, 9, 11 rushing attempts this year. 0 yesterday. 11 rushing attempts on the season, 0 yesterday. On the season, he's got 42 rushing yards.
Did you think they needed
your five games? I thought there was at least one or two that he could pull.
And I think that if they had had the ball one more time, you might have seen it.
Probably.
Takeaways.
Man, that run game was fun yesterday. 190 yards rushing. Back-to-back-to-back 100-yard rushers. And it was the scheme. And there was part of me as I watched it, maybe for the first time, and I was like, doggone it. You sat on that old scheme for way too long.
Yes! Doggone
right?
Yes. It.
And you all point the finger and have for years at Daryl Bevel. You know what Daryl Bevel was not? Daryl Bevel was not the run game coordinator. Daryl Bevel was not the evaluator of offensive linemen.
He wasn't even allowed to be the run game coordinator.
No, that was the assistant head coach.
Wow.
That had a lot of sway in this building for a lot of years.
You're my offensive coordinator. I don't actually trust you to coordinate the run game, but...
No, it is the assistant head coach who is going to have and play a huge factor in working guys out in who he wanted to handpick for draft picks in the first, second, third, fourth round, Mike, for year after year. Scheme that was not working, a scheme that was not effective, and here comes Mike Solari, and here comes some fullback ISO, and here comes some trap, and here comes a little power. Oh, and by the way, the zone read with Russ, yeah, that is still really good too, but here comes a full menu of what you can do with a run game rather than just living in one world for year after year after year after year. Right, point the finger all you want at Daryl Bevel. If Daryl Bevel had this run game to work with, I guarantee you the creativity that he had in play action, the creativity that he brought in the passing game, he would have married those two things beautifully. I was frustrated watching that. Like, where has this been? And oh, by the way, give Dwayne Brown and Solari a ton of credit because Jermaine Ifedi is playing football unlike anything he played the last 2 years. He's been great. And Chris Carson's a beast, man, and this breaking tackle's awesome.
From their own 45, Russell takes a shotgun snap. He hands it to Carson. He's got a first down. He's still on the move. He's in Rams territory, 40, down to the 35. It takes three Rams to drag him to the ground. Joyner grabbed a hold of a thigh pad, and that's about the only way he was able to help bring him down.
You know what the word they love in baseball? Adjustments. Oh, we got to make in-game adjustments, series adjustments, team adjustment, all about adjustments. If you're going to play these teams that are going to load up all these pass rushers on a D-line, you know what you need in your league? You know what you need in your scheme? You need the biggest, baddest bullies and earth movers. And I don't care what Fluker runs in a 40, and I don't care if he can't bend enough Tom Cable in your zone system to get to a second level. You know what he does? He moves earth. He scorches earth. And that run game, a big, big part of it running behind him yesterday.
Take away. Man, I got some good text messages here.
Do you?
Salk of all people calling someone else out for being too negative? Please. Brock is secretly a miserable human being. He just has a great poker face. I'm sick of Brock and his negative attitude. It's all about baseball. Let him go to another city.
Hey, mean tweets are coming tomorrow, Brock.
Oh.
Yeah, you just wait. The Miami, Florida State fans, woo. Meanest of the mean tweets ever tomorrow. It might be a whole segment at 9 o'clock.
Salk, it's just called knowing your audience. Brock knows you don't respond well to positivity. Just look at your relationship with Lydia. So he becomes the people pleaser that he is, and he just gives you what you want to hear. And then finally, I know why Russ doesn't run the ball anymore. He's just trying to be a really good run blocker. That's his best skill.
She has this optimism thing that tends to drive me nuts.
That's my mom. That's not on Lydia. Let's not. Come on. Let's talk about something else pretty positive. Chris Carson looked like a number one running back. I know you just kind of mentioned him, but I'll give him his own here as well. He ran hard. He ran physical. He was fast. He was patient at times. He was explosive. He was creative. He finished runs. He created when there wasn't much there. His first and 20 run for 16, they got pushed back, right? This is on their first touchdown drive.
Yep.
It was around midfield. It was first and 20 after a 10-yard penalty. And he ran for 16 yards on the draw. I thought that was actually the play that, like, okay, we can be in this game. Like, they were on the side, like, geez, I don't know, the Rams go down. What are we going to do? We come up with that, you know, it's a little bit of a fluky play down near the goal line to get the ball back. And then you're kind of like, they have never really been able to run or do anything against this Rams defense. And all of a sudden, first and 20, he runs for 16. It was like, oh, okay. Maybe there is something to what.
Is that when LaMarcus Joyner felt the full brunt? Oh, that was a little bit later down in the red zone.
There were a couple others. There was one where he cut back across the field. There was the one where he was super patient, kind of waited, and then exploded to the outside.
You know what you saw too?
I saw number one running back, man. I thought that was great.
You saw for the first time in 3 years business decisions.
Yeah,
again, you saw some of those dudes like. I'll reach my arm out, but I'm not necessarily going to put my chest out.
Absolutely. Yeah, he played a really good game.
Takeaways.
7 of 12 versus 3 of 9. You know what those numbers are? 7 of 12 compared to 3 of 9. Those are third down markers. And the Seahawks were 7 of 12 on third down yesterday. Some play action pass, lots of run, stayed on the field. Put together 75-yard drive, possess the football. I'll possess the Rams with it, 7-12. Rams are just 3 of 9 on third down. The problem? Two of them were just absolute backbreakers.
Yeah, the run that he had.
Jared Goff's third and 10 run where you lose contain. You just rush blindly. You rush with your eyes down. You do not keep any integrity whatsoever. And you allow the stork to go run for 11 yards. He was looking like we could put him in the quad set there with Luke Wilson, Nick Vinette, and John Ryan.
Well, just because remember he got ear holed that time by
yes.
Richard Sherman.
It took him 15 yards to slow down. He was a... wild, like his legs were. It was like me and Kyle running.
Down. He just had to slow down.
Kyle, it was like you and I running on the field. I'll never forget this D line coach. I still see him every once in a while. He's in the league still. He jokes with me because in a preseason game, I had a scramble like that, and he said, "Brock, I could see your eyes from the sideline. Your eyes were the biggest I've ever seen of any player on a football field." I'm like, "Yeah, bro, I was running for the sidelines, trying to not get killed." That's exactly what Goff was doing, but he converts it the next play, touchdown run. And then the third down, just killer. Third and 3. Shaq, you're in position. I say this all the time on my college broadcasts.
That's a bad call.
No, you're in position right there. That moment of truth, don't panic.
They never call that.
Don't reach. Don't hit. Don't grab. Just play through the ball. Let the ball come. Let it travel. Stick your hand out. You're right there. And instead, he blasts the receiver a step and a half early. He gets the penalty call. Again, touchdown run that falls.
They never call that in the flat, and in fact the official sitting right in front of it didn't call it. The back official did, who was 20 yards away. They never call that. That's a lousy call. Mm. That drove me nuts. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and like say that's the reason they lost, but that call I thought was iffy at best and one they generally don't make in the NFL. And by the way, the Fluker call was a bad call.
No, I got to get to that one in a second. All right.
You want a hot take?
Takeaways.
You want a hot takeaway?
Like hot T-A-E-K?
I'll start with a hot question. What's going on with Doug Baldwin? He had one catch yesterday.
I think he's hurt.
He did force a big penalty. I know he's been, you know, dealing with a couple of bad knees. It's not 100%. But he's been invisible even since coming back. And by the way, he was invisible before he hurt the second knee. So maybe it is just because he's hurt and he's not fully Doug Baldwin. The thing is, if that's true, would you be better off with Kaden Reynolds until Doug's healthy or somebody who could contribute more than one catch in the game?
No, because he had two or three penalties. There was a holding call. There was a legal contact. There were two against him that led to I think, first down. So, nope, his influence and his impact. I'm more concerned and going to watch, is Doug going to be okay in this new world? If you're going to be a 60% run team, are you okay if you only get four passes?
I mean, he was there for when they were a six. I mean, I would hope that he'd be okay with that. I'm real curious.
That was a world that he was growing up in, not the world where he was a $10 million man.
Real curious about the future of Doug Baldwin and the Seattle Seahawks. They have moved on from a lot of veteran presences over the last couple of years. Is he going to be able to finish this year healthy? Is he going to be able to play on two bad knees throughout the entirety of this year? And if not, will he be the next great player of this era to exit, along with maybe KJ Wright at the end of this season, as guys on their third contract tend not to deliver, not to stay healthy? And you got to wonder about where Doug is going to be at now.
We had him Blue 42 last week, and I love Brandon Marshall, but you're getting to a point there, too. Is a Demaryius Stringfellow even available on the streets on a practice squad somewhere? Is there a young receiver? There are more receivers than there are anything else in this league. Is there a young 6'3 fast receiver on someone's practice squad?
Yeah, how about the kid who was playing for Houston last night, Cutie or something? That kid was no
it's like
one.
Cutie. Little Cutie.
Yeah. Who is that guy? Cuties, he just showed up out of nowhere. Did you see the catch he made?
There's a lot of receivers. Awesome. A lot of receivers out there. How much longer? I know you guarantee Brandon's deal, and you know, there may be a game where he can't. There may just be a Brandon Marshall game where he has like five catches.
Yes. Zone
yep.
Or something.
There may
Tanner
just be.
Tanner McAvoy can be on this team for a full season. Yep. Brandon Marshall can be here for a full season.
Yep.
Takeaways.
Okay. Let's get to this holding call.
It's not holding.
Because, give me cut 10 first. Coach Carroll, this is as mad as you're ever going to hear him in a press conference.
We ran the ball 32 times on the day, you know, and they ran 30, I think, you know, so there was 60-something runs, and it comes down, you know, let's throw that flag right there. And unfortunately, it happened, you know, and they got a great break out of that. It was a great break for them. And I haven't seen the play. There's a lot of plays in that game that probably could have warranted a penalty for them. And it happened on that play right then. It just pissed me off. You know, that was how this thing ended. And it was unfortunate.
I always think about my friend Dave Lampson. Dave's a great guy. Brilliant. Perfect scores on his SATs. Went to Stanford. Straight-A student. Captain of the football, basketball,
and back in the day when it was a 1600 SAT?
Yep, 1600 on his SATs.
Wow.
English and math major at Stanford. Dave is a certified genius.
You have a friend that has a perfect SAT.
Actually,
you ever play that little game?
I have a couple of friends.
Oh, sorry.
But he's one. Anyway, Dave used to play tight end for us in high school.
Uh-huh.
And every once in a while, he'd get called for holding. And I'll never forget, just like, I hold every play. Why did you, like, I just remember going to the ref, why this one? I'm grabbing the guy doing the same thing with my hands on him every single play.
Yep.
You could call holding on me. Why did you choose this one?
Yep.
And the ref's like, I saw holding. He's like, yeah, but I'm always holding.
Yep.
That's what you do. That DJ Fluker play happens 25 times a game. And for them to call it in that spot yesterday.
What was your buddy's name? Dave?
Dave Lampson.
Did he sound like this? Because cut 16, Fluker made, I think, a similar case, maybe?
They called it. I've been taking him to the water all game. Me and 93 going at it all game. And, I mean, he got frustrated. I got frustrated. I mean, at the end of the day, we're both competitive. I got respect for him. I got a whole lot of respect for him. At the end of the day, I got to do my job. I got to go block him. I got to take him wherever he need to go. I'm going to take him there. And I ain't scared of no one. I don't back down from no one. In the day, they got luck.
I love that guy.
I do, too.
I love him. I think he's my favorite. By the way, if I'm getting a Seahawks jersey right now today.
You getting Fluke?
please.
The two guys on my list are DJ, or three maybe, are DJ Fluker, Chris Carson, and Bradley McDougal.
If you get a DJ Fluker one, though, you have to get an actual size DJ Fluker one.
Absolutely.
4X.
You know, Howdy, you know I went camping for the first time in years this summer. I'm thinking about getting a DJ Fluker jersey as a tent.
Can I
get me like a waterproof DJ Fluker jersey, and I'm going to take that thing camping with
Set
me all summer.
Can I just say, I'll add one little thing on that and why it wasn't a call. Because Ndamukong Suh did not complain for a second. These guys watch now, and I've learned this through the years. These officials watch. They have to. The game is so fast. They got to look for little tells, Mike. And not necessarily a player's reaction to a hold in that case, but how does a player fall on a block in the back? Does he fall forward? Does he fall to the side? You know, is there a jersey tug? Are these and sometimes you can see when a player is like, I just got held. And Domicu didn't. On that play, react any differently than at any other times. Was there a little jersey tug? Yes, there was. Was there one on Justin Britt on that same exact play? Yes, there was. Were there ones on the Rams, on the Seahawks defensive lineman? Absolutely.
There's always holding.
Absolutely.
And there was no reason to call that one there. Bunch of techs here. That would be more of a moo-moo than a jersey. And then if you get a Fluker jersey, Salk, you could take that thing parasailing.
I got friends in the equipment room. Should I try to get one the next hour?
An actual Fluker jersey?
An actual
jersey?
One and take a picture of you in it right now?
That'd be awesome.
Send it to 3010 for you? Like, look at me.
Would you rather put on one of his jerseys or one of his shoes?
You'd look better in the jersey, for sure.
Are you sure?
It would look great.
I would like helmet, shoes, and jersey.
His shoes are like Noah's Ark. At the waist, so it's kind of a dress.
His shoes are like Noah's Ark.
He's crossing the desert with
takeaways.
Hey, this team's going to need to make a few big plays on defense, Brock. They couldn't come up with the one they needed in this game. And I don't think that's going to happen unless they find some way to rush the passer better. Deion Jordan was active. I think he only played in a couple of snaps, and when he did, he was irrelevant. Clark is just one man, and he's a decent pass rusher, but I don't think he's a star. The rest of this group generates zero pressure, man.
Yeah.
And it makes big defensive plays really hard to come by because the opposing quarterback just has all day to think about whatever it is they want to do back there. And so I don't know how to change that. Rushers generally don't just show up mid-season. Maybe Rasheem Green will continue to improve when he comes back and is healthy. Maybe Jacob Martin will get better, a later round pick who they're hoping can rush the passer. But when you start looking at flaws and potential pitfalls on this team, there's this and then there's everything else.
And by the way, I failed to mention the first hour and a half, and shame on us, the 68,000 in that building were insane. They were insane yesterday. You all that were there yesterday took a possession away from the Rams. They burned three timeouts because of you. Multiple false starts because of you. That noise when you hear Barber up in the booth and everybody respond to it. I was listening to Tony Gonzalez and those guys like, yeah, it's just different. It's deafening. So that was the best that you had as a pass rush. Like, you had every advantage. You're never going to have it necessarily that good. And you had all of that, and it was still really hard to generate. But when it's Jacob Martin and Brandon Jackson, and they're having to do it, Mike, for a lot of those reps, that's going to be a difficult challenge.
Hey, were you crushing a Fetty for that false start? That's not on a Fetty, by the way.
It was.
I know the call was technically false start.
He was the first one. The tight end reacted to a Fetty.
It was the time of zero. I mean, it's really, they should have called a delay game. Mm. He jumped because the clock was at zero.
Yeah.
That is not, like, of all the things to crush a Fetty for he got, I think, a sort of the bad luck victim of circumstance there.
Yeah.
The fault there is, once again, on an offensive coordinator, can't get a play in on time. You come up with that big play to lock it, great, you run down the field. They don't ever, like, do they not account for the fact that might happen?
Well, there's too much checking at that point. That's a little bit of this little gray
walking.
Call
another play!
They do.
Why does it take 40 seconds?
They do, and then he comes up, and then you're trying to get to the perfect play, right? You're trying to, you know.
He came up to the line with 5 seconds, man. Yep. They didn't have, how do you not have enough? You've run a big play for 40, 50 yards down the field. You're now in position. You need to have the next play ready to go.
Yeah.
I just don't get it. All right, I'm feeling pretty hopeful, and I'd like to talk a little bit about where the Seahawks go from here. We'll do so together next. I'm Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Dutch celebration, by the way. It's Brock and Salk here. 710 ESPN Seattle, and this hour brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. I like that. It's very teams friendly, got a bunch of people involved. Those guys look pretty natural doing it. I like the double dutch. I thought it was... if we no longer have Techno Thursday or Techno Thursday with all the tight ends doing their thing, well, now you just have a little double dutch with the wide receivers. I thought that was good.
There's no moral victories in the NFL, but there are culture and identity-changing victories.
Do you think Russell does double dutch?
Does Russell do double dutch? Maybe.
Like, do you think he actually goes home and jump ropes, are you asking?
I wonder if he's ever done double dutch.
Oh, I bet so. Yeah, I bet he's done some jump rope.
I don't know. This is the guy. Remember his basketball highlight reel?
Yeah.
Is him, like, you know, swinging the ball around the perimeter.
You know what? I'll ask him. You know, I'll shoot him a little note.
Russ, do you ever do any double dutch?
Yeah, I'll try to get answers. I'm trying to effort you a Fluker jersey in real time
Have you reached out for that?
I'm going to.
Oh, you're going to?
Yeah, I'm absolutely. We have about an hour and a half here.
To do.
I mean, well, you know, they had a game there in the equipment room late last night. I'll give them till 9 this morning. Right. We'll see if we can do that. I really believe that. There's not moral victories, but there are when you want to establish your identity and you're resetting your program and your culture, Mike. I think there are those moments that you can say, yeah, we can actually do this, especially when it is 180 degrees different than anything you've done against that team for the last 3 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Pete Carroll, Cut 7, addresses that specifically. This was not the same Seahawks-Rams game we've seen.
I think that you can see, I hope you can tell, that how our team has grown. And the last 3 weeks has been really an extraordinary step forward for us. And we're jacked about, here we go. There's a long season ahead of us. And how we come out of this game and go to the next one, it will be crucial, just as it will be the next week. But there's no doubting who we are as a team and how we're trying to build this thing. And
you know what's really hard to do in basketball? It's really hard to play team man-to-man and just everybody just grind. It's a lot easier to play a 2-3 zone. Just, you know, we'll just kind of line up out there. Yeah, we'll have some adjustments or whatever. But to be a real just like man-to-man, the determination it takes of everybody, it's really hard to run the football in the NFL. It's really hard. It takes a total buy-in and commitment. And you've even seen it from this team who, you know, said they were a running team the first 2 weeks, but nope, you just don't get it. You don't know just how difficult it is to do that. And then, Mike, on top of it, you have to have, and it's what the Rams did, frankly. Okay, the Rams did this before the Seahawks did it. They said the value of veteran offensive linemen in this league is actually much more valuable than it's ever been before because these guys know what it takes. We don't have time to practice. These young bucks and developing them is even more difficult and at times impossible to do. So let's load up on some veteran NFL guys that get it at the line of scrimmage, and that is the best O-line going in the game, the Rams. You then bring in Sweezy. You bring in Fluker. Britt has grown up a bit. You trade for Dwayne Brown, and guess what you've got now? You've got a pretty established crew that understands how hard it is to run the ball in the league, but even more so, wants to. DJ Fluker wants to get into a bar brawl, right? I loved some of the conversation of Wyman and Rabel up in the booth, right? These guys are not arbitrators. It was a great line from Dave. I don't think Sweezy's out there arbitrating. No, I don't think he's that kind of guy. He's just not wired that way. He wants to just punish and finish. And Fluker yesterday, man, when was the last time you saw a Seahawk offensive lineman doing what DJ Fluker was doing yesterday? When was it? You got to go back to, you know, the Carpenter days. You got to go back to the Brandon Giacomini days. You got to go back to those days where they were moving. I mean, moving people. And this is some in Brockers and Donald and Sue, the best D-line that money can buy. And you just went out there and you just physically owned them. So, yeah, there's not a moral victory. You lost the game. Pete was peeved about it afterwards. Hated that call because that two represented in Fluker right there.
And
that
there
sound
are
we
four
played.
Or five other plays that, you know, if they go a different way. I mean, you got the ball on the ground early and it bounces right back to Goff. You have a sack. I'm sorry, you have a fumble when Tedrick Thompson delivers a knockout blow. And unfortunately, there's a penalty on the other side of the field and that negates the fumble. Yep. It felt like you had a ball that was unfortunately just tipped. Otherwise, I think Tedrick Thompson probably has an interception, a second interception, and his day looks even more different than it did. So, I mean, yeah, there were a couple of just, you know, bad bounces throughout the day that didn't go your way. It's funny. I'm excited and I'm happy because I think there's some real improvement. On the other hand, it is hard after where we've been to hear Cut 6 where Pete Carroll saying, yeah, I'm excited to go toe-to-toe with a good team.
Yeah, we went right toe-to-toe. And with these guys, and I don't know how many people out there thought that it was going to be like that, but the guys in this room did, and they went out there to go win this football game from the start to the finish throughout, and played with great intensity and great resolve about getting it done. It wasn't all pretty. We gave up some stuff that we really regret.
You really have to be realistic in order to be proud of how this team played yesterday.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Because if you're still living in the world where this team is competing for the Super Bowl right now, look, they could get there. I mean, I think they've got a realistic shot to be a wild card team. I think some of the odds say they're 1-3, somewhere in that range. In a wide open NFC where nobody seems to win consistently from week to week other than this Rams team right now. Yeah, you've got as good a shot as just about anybody at 2-3. There's only a couple of teams with one loss in the NFC, so you really do have a shot at.
But you got to play
the playoffs.
You got to play that game.
But if this is the game that convinces you of that, great.
You got to play that game. You got to be committed to playing that game, right? You've got to be committed to running the ball on 3rd-and-3 and on 3rd-and-1. So you got to be committed to those things.
Do you think that this will convince them to do that?
I would sure hope so. I don't think there's any question about it.
I mean,
it.
After this game, Pete shouldn't have to say to Schottenheimer again, hey, why don't we run the ball on 3rd-and-2?
No.
Because now he should see that they're effective doing it.
Yes. And I think just as much, like it showed, and it also exposed your limitations defensively. And that was to one of my tweets and points after the game, is this is the style you have to play.
Yeah,
when you have some of the limitations that you do, when you give up 306 yards on first down, I'll say that again. You gave up 306 yards on first down where you just tried to line up and say, you know what, keep it in front of us. We're going to trust and play our three deep. We're going to play our zone coverage. We're going to play our scheme. Try not to give up the explosive plays. You did so. And they broke tackles and they got over the top of your second level coverage. It was a total and utter mess. And they were to the tune of 306. So if you were going to go toe-to-toe, you had to shorten the game. You had to minimize possessions. You had to control the clock for enormous big chunks in it and try to get them out of rhythm. Because the way your defense is constructed right now with the Deion Jordan that's hobbled, a Frank Clark that gave you everything he had, but he can't play, 75% of the snaps. So you've got some guys out there that are just limited, that are really limited to what you can do. And I think those factors, I think all of that says to, the head coach and to the offensive coordinator, hey, man, we got to live in this world. And oh, by the way, back-to-back 100-yard days out of Carson Davis and Carson again.
And Davis, by the way, was right there. And the cool thing about at least the last 200-yard games is they've had a second running back who's had close to 50 or more than 50. I mean, what did Davis have yesterday? 70 yards or something like that? And, last week it was Penny who ended up with 49 yards in the game as the secondary back. So, they are finding ways to move the ball on the ground. And the fact that they did it yesterday against the good Rams team, I'll be curious to see what happens when these two teams meet later in the year. Yeah, they'll be down there, and that'll obviously bring with it, you don't get the advantage of the crowd. On the other hand, the Seahawks have had more luck down there than they have up here against
the Rams. Yeah, and unlike pass rushers that don't grow on trees, and you're not going to find those guys, and you're going to hope that Rasheem Green gets a little bit better, you hope Deion Jordan gets a little healthier, you do have Ed Dixon coming here after this game. And he was their number one. He and McDougald were their number one targets in free agency, and a guy that's going to help. I think that run blocking, that when he's lined up on Ndamukong Suh, as Vinette was yesterday, he at least can be functional in a pass blocking situation too. That's going to be a help that you get here sooner than later.
They had a pretty good offseason, man. I mean, that's one of the other things that just sort of comes from this, is you watch DJ Fluker, as you watch Bradley McDougal, as you watch some of their young draft picks.
Yep.
They had themselves a pretty good offseason, and probably the best one they've had in the last couple of years. Excited to talk to Pete Carroll. We'll do that coming up at 9:30 this morning, as we always do following the game. Up next, good news, bad news, no news, and a report out yesterday that I think is a huge mistake for the Seahawks moving forward. It's next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Good news.
Yeah!
Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
All right, Pete Carroll, 45 minutes from now, and certainly we will talk a little bit about what happened in the final 2 minutes of that game and some of the timeouts, etc. We'll get you guys on the horn, because I know there's a lot of people mad about this still, so it's all right. Howdy's gotten them all fired up. We'll talk coming up in a few right after the news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Washington Huskies climbed 3 spots to number 7 in the AP poll after beating UCLA.
Yeah, that's good news. That's very surprising news. Now, and I know, you know, teams lost. I would have thought they would have stayed at 10, maybe 2-9. Teams lost significantly in front of them. Auburn gets a second loss. I told you Auburn's going to lose four games this year, and that's going to be bad for UW. BYU gets blown out by Utah State. Arizona State loses. So, you know, football is kind of weird. That committee that's going to get together here in a few weeks is going to look at all of that strength of schedule and all of those opponents and everything else. And when they do, I don't think they would spit them out today at number 7. Now, this weekend's obviously paramount. This is the biggest game in the Pac-12. The Huskies are the only playoff contender in this conference. A trip to Eugene and a win down there would go a long ways. But, yeah, I guess in the AP world right now, that's good news.
Yeah, it is. But I think here's the problem, and here's why some of it is no news. 5 of the 6 teams ahead of them can probably afford one loss and still beat them out without a problem. Alabama, first of all, they're probably not going to lose. And if they do, they can afford one loss.
Yes.
Georgia can probably afford one loss. They're 6-0. The blue-blooded programs right now at Ohio State and Clemson and then Notre Dame.
Yep.
I mean, the 5 of the 6, only West Virginia. Okay, fine. If West Virginia loses Big 12, nobody really takes them that seriously.
Yes.
But the 5 schools in the top 5 are Heritage, Blue Blood, 2 SEC, Ohio State, the cream of the crop in the Big 10, and then Clemson, who's dominated the ACC and been to a couple of these national championship games recently, and then, oh, I'll just throw in Notre Dame, the biggest name imaginable in college football. Those are going to be 5 schools that are probably going to need to lose twice for you to leapfrog them.
Yep.
Good news, bad news, no news.
A sold-out Key Arena saw Kevin Durant introduced in a Sean Kemp jersey and then address the crowd.
First off, I want to give a shout-out to the Seattle Storm for holding it down and winning the championship. Much love. On behalf of myself, NBA, and my organization, my teammates, we'd like to thank you guys for coming out and supporting us. I know it's been a rough 10 years. NBA is back in Seattle for tonight, but hopefully it's back forever soon. Please, please enjoy the game. Stay safe. I appreciate it. Thanks for the love.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's good news there, and he just seemed to connect really well, and it means something to him. This city means something to him that he was drafted here, and I don't think it's ever sat well with him that he was supposed to play in Seattle, and he ended up going to Oklahoma City. I don't think any of that ever sat well with Kevin Durant, so kudos to him for handling this with as much grace and personality as he did. It was great.
Yeah, it was great news. Hey, do you any interest in Jeff Van Gundy? He called the game, and he's a fun radio host. Should I try to get him on tomorrow? Because he's got some strong opinion, and he said it. He feels very strongly that this team should come back. And I know I work with one of the guys that works on their crew, and he was saying as they were driving to the arena, like, there are a few teams in place. I mean, the toughest thing here is expansion. And do these 30 guys in the co-op want to split their checks and add 2 more ways? That's kind of difficult to conceive. Are there a couple franchises out there that are struggling in the South that may come into play? But even beyond that, a Van Gundy that knows this league, that knows what it means coming to Seattle, that got to experience it on Friday night. I'm going to try to get him on the show tomorrow. He's a high opinion guy as well, and it was great news. Titus was there with his buddies, with his hoops team, sitting and watching and observing. Absorbing it. And I said to him last night, I said, hey, what was it, man? 1 to 10. He's like, that doesn't even begin. It was beyond that, Dad. It was so much fun. These guys are such amazing players.
Did you hear any of our Brock and Salk opens that we did on Friday?
Was it fun?
It was kind of. Do we have any of that, Kyle? Can we play some of that for Brock? We had we turned our show into essentially an NBA game.
Oh, you and Wassel?
Yeah, me and Wassel. We had a whole introduction planned, and then while we were talking, they just shouted things over us.
Yes. Goodness.
It was pretty spectacular.
Now, entering the show, boy.
There you go.
Attention, please. A flagrant foul called on Mike Salk.
Yeah, I got a flag.
Hey, Pittman made SportsCenter, by the way.
He did?
He did, yeah. Like, is a play-by-play. They even mentioned his name. He was on a call or something.
Wow.
Yeah, way to go, Pittman. Big time.
Great point. Let's make some noise.
Oh, that's good.
Good news.
Good news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
According to Adam Schefter, the Seahawks are not planning to franchise tag Earl Thomas.
I think it's a terrible idea. I think that's bad news, and I don't understand it for the life of me. Why not? The franchise tag is like $9.5 million for a safety. It's a perfectly reasonable amount. And if he doesn't want to sign, then you can always find a way to trade him. Why aren't you still trying to get some level of value back for Earl? And don't sell me this ridiculous notion that it's going to come back to them in some sort of a comp pick.
Oh, it's about principle, Mike.
I don't buy any of those comp picks, not for 1 second. So if the principle here is we want to do right by Earl?
Yep.
No, the principle should be we tried to do right by all these other guys. And at this point, we want a third, fourth, or even a fifth round pick, but get something for him. Why should you just give up on it? That there's no need for that whatsoever. I hope John Schneider reconsiders that, and I hope he franchise tags Earl. And quite frankly, if he wants to come back and play one more year at $9.5 million, I think it's a good deal.
Yeah, I think we'll have a lot of football to watch Tedrick Thompson that may change this opinion one way or another. As for a report over the weekend right now as to something in the NFL 3-4 months from now, that is, in my opinion, no news.
Good news, bad news, hey, no news.
Breaking news. Did you see this, Kyle? Breaking news.
No.
Wazoo president here appointed to the College Football Playoff Board.
Really?
Yeah, that just coming down the wire. Wazoo
Looks
president
like
Kirk Schultz
two contenders
will serve as the Pac-12 representative to the College Football Playoff Board of Managers. He
Great
will be
news.
In that committee room. Good. Good news.
Hey, and the Cougs pulled away from Oregon State in the second half and beat them 56-37.
It's under the radar news.
At 5-1?
The Cougs have been under the radar at 5-1. Are they in the top 25 yet, Kyle?
They're 29th.
No.
They were receiving votes. They were just outside the top 25.
Kind of weird. I mean, I know they haven't really played anybody, but they've lost one game and, by the way, probably should have won it. Yeah, they are what, 26, 27, 28th? 28th behind Iowa and Stanford, who are just ahead of them.
Yep.
I would hope that they get into the top 25 here with another win.
They will have a bye, and then it is Oregon, correct?
You got it.
Yep. And is Oregon at home or down in UG?
In Pullman.
So they will have a bye. They will hope that the Ducks, who had a bye last weekend to get ready for the Huskies, will get beat up so badly in that game that then the Ducks will have to travel to the Palouse. And I got another text. I got a bunch of texts to send here. I got another text because I'm curious. I had somebody reach out to me and say, if Oregon beats UW, is there any chance that that old game day can actually finally come to Pullman?
Oh.
If the Ducks come into Pullman the
really?
Following weekend.
Would it? I'm
they
sure there's some other game. Huh? Instead, they'll have to go to Temple,
yeah,
or they'll
Temple
have to go to
Owls,
James Madison,
sorry.
Or that'll be the week they've got to go to North Dakota.
We're heading to Cincinnati.
There's always some ridiculous UTEP. Reason. Come UTEP. They're going to UTEP.
You know, El Paso, the Miners.
Old Crimson. You know what, though, man? Old Crimson gets a shout-out every game day. It is there, and it gets a shout-out every game day.
It may get a shout-out, but it's never going to be actually in Pullman. There's no way. All right, Pete Carroll joins us in 35 minutes. The question that everybody seems to have for him is, why did he call timeout, and was it a huge mistake? I don't think it was at all, but Brock is starting to be swayed by Howdy. Will Howdy take Brock over to the dark side? Find out next on Brock and Salk.